Hello, and thank you for coming back for the second part of this podcast. First two-parter in a while. And the first time in a while that I've recorded one of these intros from in my bed. What a day. I've got Friday off. Woohoo. Anyway, yeah, this is part two of my conversation with Brian Totty Jr. I suppose I split it in a slightly unconventional way, in that the first episode is probably a fair bit longer than this one will be, but it was just the way the conversation was flowing. I kind of was hoping to make it a two-parter just because it seemed like it would be a really long one for one episode, and there wasn't anything I really wanted to cut out. And as I was editing it, I kind of was sitting there thinking, there's nowhere that I can cut this that's not going to affect how the flow of the conversation goes for people, for you guys listening. And then it got to a point, and I was like, that's the perfect point. There's a shift there in what we discuss. But unfortunately, it was quite late into the podcast. But I decided just to go for it. I thought that way, hopefully, it'll meet all the criteria I was hoping to meet. I sound very official there. Absolutely not. I've probably made it sound like I put more thought into it than I did. But anyway, I hope you are happy enough with the two episodes. I did like a thing on Instagram, like a little poll, whether people prefer listening to episodes over like one long episode, or whether they prefer a kind of two-parter. To me, it doesn't really make any difference, other than I have to record two of these intros and two of these outros, so you have to listen to me babble for longer. But unfortunately, the poll came back 50-50, so I was completely, unmoved by Instagram as to what to do. But I decided to go for the two-parter. It just felt weird to put out a two-hour episode. You know, when I started doing these over Zoom, I thought that it might mean that it was easier to curtail things after 1 hour, but so far that's not proven the case. Been having some ace chats, but I've still found it hard to moderate the length. Maybe it's because people are like locked down and stuff, and there's nothing else to do. It's just good to speak to someone else. Who knows? Or maybe I'm a terrible, terrible podcast man. Anyway, if you're listening to this as soon as it goes up, you've got about an hour left to order one of the new t-shirts, but I'm guessing most people, the majority of folk, will be listening to this after. So the t-shirts are now ordered, hopefully, if I've done my job right, if Future Nath has stuck to his word. But yeah, I mean, I don't want to give too much away, but I might have ordered a couple extra ones just in case. So give me a shout if you want a t-shirt. It's ultimately what I'm saying, they're £15. I'll post it to you. I'll meet you within the Aberdeen area, if I must. And give me a shout. It's a good way to support the podcast and get a cool t-shirt. I'm looking forward to seeing the designs when they arrive. Anyway, this second part is with Brian. We talk more about, kind of in depth, about his fights, about people he potentially wants to fight, about his mentality towards fighting, a bit of all that. We have a bit of a laugh, and it's a really good second part, and it was a really nice way to finish off the podcast. So enjoy it, and I'll be back at the end. I was just going to ask you just some questions about your fights, specifically. So I know that in the last few years, you obviously fought Jack Kennedy. We kind of talked on that.
Yeah.
I know you won the European MTGP title you won?
Won the European MTGP against Michael Pham, yeah.
Yeah, I've not actually seen that fight for reasons we've discussed already.
Yep.
I've seen photos of you, and you came out, I think you had quite a bad cut.
In my hairline, I think there was two cuts in my hairline. It wasn't too bad.
Yeah.
It just the blood made it the where it was, and obviously with adrenaline running and your blood running, it ran quicker with the sweat as well. It just yeah. looked worse than it was. Like, ran, pretty much ran into an elbow. So it was in the second round, so it was my own fault. But I mean, it didn't faze me. It's, yeah, I've had plenty of cuts. I've been cut under my eye. I've been obviously cut up here. I think I've been cut somewhere else up here. I've been cut my eyebrow, and I think I've been cut up there. But it's, I mean, it's part of the sport.
Yes,
yeah. It's you could. People get worse cuts on a night out when they're pushing for a drunk and smash their face off a curb. So, I mean, I've probably had less stitches than most people for Glasgow, you know. So I'm doing not bad.
Yeah, that's a soundbite. I'm just going to put that out as a trailer for the podcast. Less cuts than more people in Glasgow, despite the bow tie. Was that Michael Pham fight a tough fight? I know, like. Like I say, I didn't. I've not seen the fight, and I don't know how many years ago was that.
Maybe a year, 2 years. Yeah. Maybe a year ago, 2 years ago now. Yeah.
I didn't follow the build up of the fight at the time, but I kind of went back and looked at it, and it looked like kind of Michael Pham. From what I know of MTGP, he was kind of like the favorite in the fight, and that they kind of pushing him as. Because you know, were you UK number one at that point, so I think they were pushing.
No, I'm not. I was UK number five at that point, so I'm UK number two now.
Okay.
I was UK number five at that point, yeah. He was what to come up into. He was what to get take my spot. And obviously he had a nice shiny belt, so yeah. I'll take that off him on a trip to London. It was a good fight. It was a good show. It was tough, but I knew he had heavy hands. He had a fast left leg. We knew that before the fight as well. And we'd seen, I think everybody's seen him with that spinning elbow knockout. Yeah. I can't even remember. I don't even know who he fought, but I think everybody in their grand seen that knockout. So I knew going into his fight, he looked for that. If he was desperate, he'd throw that. So yeah. I knew, yeah, he cut me. I got a wee bit excited with that, but we knew, me and my team knew what we had to do. I listened to my coaches. I didn't, people get cut and they start freaking out. It's blood, you're bleeding, but I mean, you're in a fight. Like, you're going to might get a burst nose, you might get a cut. So. Yeah. If you can't deal with that, you should maybe be asking yourself why you're fighting.
Yeah.
But like I said, I don't mind getting cut opened. I'll still go in and fight. I'll fight to the end. I don't. It's only superficial. It can be healed. It can be stitched back. You can be stitched back up again. there's worse things that can happen in the world.
Don't go swimming if you don't want to get wet. It's the old saying.
Yep.
What other fights are kind of memorable for yourself over the years? I can't remember the tie that you fought on Yoko, but
Prappit. Prappit.
Yeah,
that was a tough fight. I think I had three or four opponent changes before that fight as well. I had injuries as well, but as what it is, like, I still went into that fight.
Yeah.
Thinking I can win, knowing that I can win, it just wasn't my night. Like, I believe every fight I go into, I can win. If you don't think you can win the fight, why are you taking the fight?
Mm-hmm.
Like, I think I can beat anybody on the planet, and I'm not trying to sound big headed or egotistical, but I believe on my best day I can beat anybody on the planet. And I think as a fighter, as an athlete, you need to believe that. Like, Sprinters, when Usain Bolt was at the top of his game winning everything, they didn't go in going, oh fuck, this guy's going to beat me today. They went in thinking they could win that race.
Yeah.
So I go into every fight thinking I can beat anybody. And yes, I'm aware of the dangers of the fight, of the sport, but that's why I train so hard. I don't go in thinking I'm just the best ever, I'll beat anybody. No, I go in knowing I can beat anybody as long as I put the work in, as long as I turn up on the night as well. And again, I said it before, like, you can be as good as you want, but you still sometimes need that little bit of luck to get you through.
Yeah.
Like, and I'm not saying I've been, my fights, every fight I've had has been harder than the last fight. Then I always assume people are training as hard as me. That's what drives me.
Yeah.
That, and I've got, like I said before, I've got a good team around me to push me, to push me hard, and to tell me, no, you're overdone. You need a day to recover. if I need that day to reset my brain, then I need that day to reset. But I need, sometimes I need told. Sometimes I need told that, and that's my fault. That's.
Yeah, so what I say, I think it's always better to be one of the people in the gym that's being told you need to rest, you need to train, having a coach on your back or be working too hard, than, you know, you get people in the gym that are the opposite, and people are like, you've got a fight coming up, you need to be in the gym more. Like,
mm-hmm.
I know which side I'd rather be on.
Yeah, 100%. If I need to tell somebody to get in the gym, to train, then I'll tell them once.
Yeah.
If I need to tell them again, it's like, look, you're wasting my time, you're wasting your time, because you're not showing that you want this. Why should I give up my free time to try and push you when you're not interested? You're not interested in working hard enough.
Yeah.
And fortunately, I've not had to have that conversation with anybody. But I know people that, I know coaches and friends that have had to have that conversation with fighters and with students. And it's a horrible conversation to have, but there's no point in trying to kid yourself or kid them.
Mm-hmm. Totally.
If they're not in it, they're going to get hurt at the end of the day.
Yeah. Just wanted to ask you another question, something you mentioned just a minute ago about like your mentality and stuff, and having that winning mentality. Is that something you've always had, or is it something you've developed through the like competing? Like, have you gone through stages where you've maybe not had that same confidence, that same mental strength, and had to work on it?
I would say for the most part, I've always had it. Yeah. Like I said, when I switched gyms, that was a point I was kind of quite low. Once, but even coming back, like, yeah, I was enjoying the sport. I loved the sport again. And I wanted a fight to see how much. I still wanted it, to see if I was just content with training, or because I still felt like I wanted to compete. I still felt like I hadn't shown my true potential.
Yeah.
I still wanted at least one more to go and see just how I felt, and pretty much to prove that I made the right decision in switching gyms, like to shut a lot of people up. I mean, people still always talk, but for my own head, I want to prove to everybody that was talking shit that I made the right decision. And yeah, that was probably actually the most pressure I've ever put myself going into a fight,
mm-hmm.
ever. Just because how much I wanted to prove that I was still relevant, that I wasn't done, because people were beginning to think that I didn't want it, I was done. And I mean, I think I was only 24 at the time. I mean, so that's not old at all in terms of sport. I don't tend to take, and I mean, I know we spoke about me getting cut and me not bothering about getting cut, but I don't tend to take too much damage in fights. Like, yeah, I get black eyes and that, I get marked up, but I'm from Scotland, we're all whiter than Casper, so you know, it's like you're going to see marks in this. Again, that goes back to what we spoke about with the scoring as well. It's like, how can you score on somebody that's whiter than, that's pretty much transparent? Yeah, I mean, you're going to see a red mark as soon as they get hit.
Yeah,
I mean, I don't go to sunbeds, so you're always going to see a mark. Like, that shouldn't then affect a scoring. It should be momentum.
Mm-hmm.
But sorry, I get off on a tangent now.
Now you are. Have you heard Spencer's theory that no white guy can look good in tie shorts?
Yeah, pretty much. That's why I get tattooed.
How's it been? I know obviously you and Spencer are now at the same gym. How's that been training with him?
Yeah, good. It's just good to have another A-class fighter in the gym. Like, I'm pretty much have been the only A class fighter in the gym for most of this time, and the gym's been opened. We had George Mann training with us for a bit, but he obviously relocated to Australia. Martin McBride came to hops in and out as well. But having Spencer in the gym training with us as well, it's another good training partner for me. It's another highly competitive athlete.
Yeah.
That I get on really well with. So we push each other. And again, it's just somebody else to help bring on the team that's coming through. And again, the better they get, the better we get as well.
Mm-hmm.
And the two is push each other.
Yeah, imagine.
As well. So but we have a laugh with it. It's good fun. Nothing's in bad taste or bad blood, you know what I mean? So it's all good fun.
Yeah, I can just imagine with, like, when you were describing there that about your competitive side and stuff, and then I was thinking even then, like, knowing Spencer, knowing that you two are training together, I can only imagine what that must look like in the gym now.
Like, yeah, it's a good laugh. Like, everybody knows Spencer likes to go forward and whack the body. A lot of people think I'm a bit more standoffish or just clinch. Like, they don't see the work I put in the gym. And like I said, I've still got more gears to go. It's hard to explain, but I don't tend to get going through the gears maybe as much as I should, or let things go as much as I should in fights. But that's how this time has been good. Like, I'm getting more out of training with Spencer, like, just going, fuck it, let's just see what happens. If I get caught with something,
yeah,
I'll go forward. And you've seen it in a couple of fights recently that I have started to push that wee bit more, let my hands go a bit more.
Yeah.
Obviously the Gomez fight was shit, but that was shit for reasons. But
what were the reasons you went going into that? I didn't think I just watched that today, and I didn't think it was shit. And I'll tell you something about that fight after you've spoken.
It was shit from my point of view, because I knew I could hit the guy. I wanted a highlight reel knockout. I was headlining the Yokel card, that show. I wanted that highlight reel knockout, and I knew I could hit him. Yeah, I knew he was tall and long. He was going to throw punches back at us, but I knew I could hit him. I knew I could stop him, but I got so caught up in just wanting to stop him with the perfect shot, the walk off KO.
Yeah.
That I just saying, oh, fuck this. I always say to people, if in doubt, clinch it out. So that's kind of my fallback. Like, when I get stuck in that trance or that, like, I'm not doing anything, I'm just kind of looking for that perfect shot. I just, oh, fuck it. Yeah. Going and clinch them. And like I said, like, other fights, I kind of tend to get stuck in a rhythm,
mm-hmm,
as well. Like, I don't go, I know I'm winning a fight, so I'm like, Don't need to change it. If I push it, you can knock him out. I probably should have pushed it in.
Yeah.
But I see me come out of fights. Every fight, I'll apologise to my coaches. They're like, what the fuck are you apologising for? I'm like, I could have done better.
Yeah.
Shut the fuck up. Like, no, but I could have. But again, that's just how much I expect from myself and how competitive I am,
yeah,
I suppose.
But yeah, you didn't have long to prepare for that fight either, really, because the pullouts as well. Is that right?
Yeah, well, I was meant to fight Kennedy, and then Kennedy got his fucking jaw blown off two weeks before the fight, and they got me Noel Gomez. Good record as well,
yeah,
don't get me wrong. He was no mug. He'd been training and fighting in Thailand, but watched his fights, I just knew I could hit him. I think I had a week. We had a week of training, or no, even a week, because we found out, I was actually at a wedding when I found out Kennedy, when I seen the result, Kennedy got his jaw blown off. Seen that, and they just put it the food. I was like, well, that's my fight off. So that was me with a couple of burgers and a bit of pizza. Yeah. For then my coach to message us and go, enjoy your night, don't go too mental. I was like, I fucked it now. But it was fine. Got up on the Sunday, just like kind of reset, and just waiting. We found out on the Wednesday that I had a fight. So I was gave us, it didn't even give us a week, gave us Wednesday, Thursday. Oh, it was late in the Wednesday we found out. So it gave us the Thursday, Friday and the Saturday training. And then the week after I was cutting weight. So we had 3 days really to prep for a completely different opponent. Because we'd had a plan for going into the second fight with Kennedy. We knew where we were stronger, where we wanted to show that we were stronger, where we had improved on as well, and what I was really capable of. But I think that as well had a negative effect on me going into the fight, because I was pissed off with him for taking that fight 2 weeks before and getting his chin blown off. But yeah, it's Muay Thai. It's Muay Thai. That's all I can say.
I remember before, like my own second fight, your fight with that you just with Gomez was like 2 weeks before. I don't know if you saw recently Spencer put up a thing about how he won before one of his fights. He watched a certain Liam Harrison.
Yeah.
It reminded me of before I watched before I went into my second fight. I think it was like 2 weeks before I watched your fight with Gomez, and it was like the first time, like I'd seen your fights before, but it was when the first time I properly like focused on your style.
Uh-huh.
After watching that fight, I went back and watched like the Kennedy fight again, and watched loads of your fights, and I was saying to my coaches like, the fight in 2 weeks, I want to go forward like this and just like kind of box and clean fight like you did. So when Spencer posted that, I was like, fuck, that's how I was with like Brian Totty, but not one fight. All his fights that were on YouTube. I remember really enjoying watching that fight in your cow.
When I watch it back, it wasn't as bad as I thought, but I know I'm capable more. Like you hear the commentator say it as well, like Vinny Shorman, you hear him saying it. It's just, he said it before, a lot of people have said it, that there's something, I've definitely got more gears there. I know I've got more gears there, and I keep saying it, like people haven't seen what I'm truly capable of. And it's not that I'm going to fights I don't respect who I'm fighting. Like I do, I just train that hard that when I'm winning and I'm comfortable, when I know I'm comfortably winning, I don't need to get caught up in a slugfest. I don't need to get caught up in anything stupid. Yeah, I could probably, if I pushed another gear, I could probably stop them or put it beyond fucking reasonable doubt, make them throw in the towel or something. But again, I don't think I've had the challenges that I need to show.
Yeah.
That level, it's like when you had a really, really smart kid in school that was super destructive, and it wasn't because they were a wee arsehole, it was because they were bored.
Yeah.
That's sometimes how I feel going out, like when I'm in fights, I'm just like, some fights I've lost because I've switched off in the fight, like completely, I'm better than this guy, like just, fuck it, it doesn't matter, like, just chill, and then I lose the fight because I'm just like, I'm too chilled.
Yeah.
Whereas I maybe need that, the fights that people don't think that I'm capable, that I should be fighting. That's the fights I want. That's the fights I need.
Yeah. Do you think that's maybe the case in the Kennedy fight, that he was like an opponent that really pushed you? Because you, like as you were saying, the commentators in that fight said like that was the best they'd seen you on fighting on your cow. And it definitely was a performance.
Yeah, we'd actually been matched before, me and Kennedy, to fight on a show in Liverpool. And then he pulled out again 2 weeks before that to fight Singdam. And then I still got a fight on Yokel against Mocaf.
Okay.
So I still got a fight, so I wasn't too bummed out, but it was like it turned an 8 week fight camp into a 12 week fight camp, a 10 week fight camp, you know what I mean? So I'd already started my prep for cutting weight and dieting and things like that, and then had to then postpone. Then it was another month before I ended up getting a fight. You know what I mean? So it was. It is what it is. It's that kind of gave me a wee bit of, like, all right, you're a bit of a dick, because I get it, you're getting an offer, I get it, to fight Singdam. Yeah, you want to take it. But for me, if you've already agreed to fight 2 weeks before, how can you go, no, I'm going to fight him, but to fight him, and then he's done the same when we did fight, he fought in Sweden a few weeks, maybe a month to 3 weeks before when we fought to the draw, and then obviously fought 2 weeks before he was meant to fight me the last time. So it's, I see it as a wee bit of a bit disrespectful.
Yeah.
I put my full focus into it. If I get offered an offer, it's 2 weeks before, like, no, I've got this fight.
Yeah.
It's a month later, right, okay, well, let me get through this fight and we'll discuss it. After that, if I'm fine, yeah, I'll take it. But I'm not going into a fight, just, I'm not going to fight somebody 2 weeks before, or if I got offered something that I already agreed a fight, I'd say, I'd fucking love to, but I've got enough fight. Like, I was fighting in Sweden and I got offered a fight in China, I think it was, to go and fight in China, but I had to fight in Sweden. It was more money for the one in China, but I knocked it back because I'd already agreed to the one in Sweden. And that was a couple of weeks difference. Yeah, I could have done the two, but it was more that the guy I was fighting would have been fighting in China was super aggressive. Like, it was one of the ones, you're going to be hurt. Like, whether you win or lose the fight, you're going to have bumps and bruises. So you'd have been, I wouldn't have been at my best going into the next fight. So, I mean, like I say, I just found it a bit disrespectful. I mean, I spoke to him. It shows in that, like, we're fine, like, but that's always going to be in my head. So it's just that's just that wee bit of something I just keep there just to go, you know what, fuck you. But when you know yourself, when you get in a training camp, you're getting down to the last bits of cutting weight, and you can't be bothered, but you're tired and you need to get through a training session. It's just the wee things. I keep the wee things in my head just to go, you know what, fuck you. Like, let's go. Like, I mean, just that wee bit of extra push. And I said, I think as well that because he had fought Sangdam, putting on a good performance against him, he had everything to lose. I had nothing to lose that fight.
Yeah.
He'd built himself. Everybody thought he was going to win the fight quite comfortably. So it was good to surprise him, good to shock him all. I know what I'm capable of when I let it go. But yeah, and like I said, he'd fought Sangdam, so it was like, that was my chance to go stamp my authority. I want to be fighting these guys. Like, I deserve to fight these guys, not him.
Do you have that, like, a chip on your shoulder going into that fight in terms of, like, with him kind of being, like, expected to win, and you thought he was probably writing you off a little bit? That's how it sounds like to me.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think he ripped me off. I think he knew I was, like, every fight was dangerous, and I think he knew that I was dangerous, or could be dangerous. I still think he's obviously went in that fight thinking he can win it, as every fighter should. Every fighter should go into a fight thinking they should win the fight. But I wouldn't say a chip on my shoulder. I just went in with, I've worked hard for all the fights I've worked hard for everything I've accomplished. I want the big fights. I want to be fighting your Sangdams and guys like that.
Yeah.
I want that chance. I want to prove that I'm, like, a lot of people go in and fight these guys and just go in and say, I've been in the ring with them. They've not actually fought them. I want to go in and fight these guys. Win, lose, or draw, I want to go in and fight these guys. It's nothing, not, like, I respect them, I respect what they do, but I'm going in to fight everybody. I'm going in to try and beat everybody. I'm not going in to take part. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
I'm not just going in to make up a number and just to say, oh, I fought one of the greats. No, I'd go in to fight. Kennedy, yeah, like I said, like, he'd fought Sangdam, so that was a good way for me. He was a stepping stone for me, a way to prove that I should be fighting these guys. And I'm not saying that he's a stepping stone, as I was overlooking him. He's a dangerous fighter, still a very dangerous fighter. He's got a lot of stoppages from elbows, from cutting people, from knockouts. But like I said, I know I can beat him. I know I can beat anybody.
I got two questions off the back of that, and then I'll I'll let you go. But so the first one is 2021, four fights for yourself. If you've got four fights for yourself, who would you want to fight?
Coakley, Kennedy, Singdam.
Yeah.
Coakley pretty much, because that one's pretty much agreed, so that one's going to happen at some point. Kennedy, because there's some unfinished, but there's unfinished business there. I think he'd agree to that as well. Nobody likes a draw in Muay Thai. I want to know who's the best. Singdam, because I want to prove that I belong at that level.
Yeah.
And Charlie Peters, because I want my number one spot.
Yeah. He's not been as active lately, has he, Charlie Peters?
No, so if he's not going to be active, he should piss off and just let me take the number one spot then.
Fair play. The last question I was just going to ask, just to wrap up, is it's kind of a double barrel question, but like, if anyone was kind of listening to this podcast and had heard about your sort of mental strength when coming to fighting, how would you advise them to go about gaining that confidence for themselves and getting that mindset? And the second question, answer that first, and I'll give you the second part.
I don't know. You can't really teach mental strength. Like, I think you can develop it, but it needs to be something you want. If you want something bad enough, you'll find a way. You'll find the strength to do it. I mean, I think the biggest thing, the biggest bit of advice I can give to people is, especially young fighters coming up, I was actually having a conversation the other day with one of the young fighters in the gym. We've got Kieran, and I said to a few people, like, if I could go back to when I was at late teens, early 20s, like, fight as much as possible, like I did, yes, but if you've got an injury that you shouldn't be fighting with, don't fight. Like, look after your body. Like, take advantage of everything we've got now. You've got chirotherapy. You've got You've got the needling. You've got chiropractors. You've got physiotherapists now. Everybody's got. Everybody knows somebody that's got one or availability to get one. I like, take advantage of that when you can, especially in your early 20s. Like, you look after your body in your early 20s. Fight as often as possible. Don't duck fights. Like, fight the hardest guy there is there, but do it at the right time. Don't go in going, oh, my hand's a bit, I shouldn't, you punched the pad and you've dislocated your thumb or something. Don't go in and going, oh, I'll just push through and fight. It's like, no, that's fucked, mate. You know, you should let that recover. Like, I've went into fights with my shoulder popping out, like subflux, like slightly popping out of socket, and continued to fight, like, because I was just determined I was fighting. Yeah, that's, you can say that's mental strength, but you can also say that's stupidity, because I could have ended my career.
Yeah.
With that, I'm not saying that I didn't learn a lot from that. I did. I went in and hung my own. So again, that added to my mental strength, that added to, well, if I'm 100%, I can beat that guy. Don't get me wrong, I've went into fights with injuries and won fights. So it's not catastrophic. Like, you're always going to go into a fight carrying niggles, carrying some form of injury because of the volume of training and how hard the training is. But if you've got something that could severely decapacitate you in a fight, then in that sense, don't fight. But the rest of the time, like, if you've got a twisted ankle, you can still run a twisted ankle. I'm sorry. You put an ankle on it, you can still go. So that doesn't affect you. If you've got a fractured ankle, that's different. If you've got a fractured hand, that's different. Things like that. That would be my advice to people, especially the look after your body in your 20s, because it's going to let your career last longer.
Yeah. And just to finish off, what would you, like, what has Muay Thai given you that you, I'll keep going back to sport and keep driving you on?
It's just giving me something to be passionate about, like something to compete at. Obviously, getting paid is a nice wee bonus for it, but I mean, it's not, like I said, it's no great money. It's not like boxers are getting, or some of the UFC guys are getting, but it's a nice bonus, but it's not why I do the sport. I do the sport because I love competing. I love the combat of it. And as I'm getting older, it's like good to see people coming through and developing and getting better, and people go, I want to say people recognising you, but that's not what I mean by it. I don't mean it as like I'm some fucking celebrity, because I'm certainly not. I just mean it's nice, like when people have seen you think, oh, can you show me this or blah, 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 and you get to, you train with these guys and you're like, you're fucking dynamite. Like, what do you want me to show you something for? Like, your class, you know what I mean? It's nice to have that respect, I suppose, from people, and that what you say is valued. Like, what you've put yourself through is actually like valued in terms of people like learning and getting better and adapting. And if I can be a small part in somebody's journey to being a world champion or to doing what they want with their career, even if it's not Muay Thai or anything in life, like I'm happy to do that. That's how history's made. You know, like one thing you can say could totally change the course of somebody's life.
Mm-hmm.
Like it's things like that. And like, again, like before I started Muay Thai, I had a lot of mates that were drinking, and still to this day, they do the exact same thing. They finish work and they go to the pub every night, every day, and then the weekend they'll go out and get full of gear. And like, I've seen mates like in hospital, like no boys have died because they don't have any other outlook. That's all they do. It's like that's not the life that I'd want for anybody. That's not the life I want for myself. It's not the life I would want for anybody. So like, I think everybody comes to a point in their life when they have a choice to make, and I think sports and Muay Thai and that can, or not even just Muay Thai, sports in general can help you. I think a lot of time when kids especially get to teenage years, they run out of things to do, the clubs stop, like they've got a lot of football clubs or rugby clubs or after school clubs and things like that for kids at a young age, but then when they get to their teens, there's just everything seems to stop for them. It certainly did in when I was growing up. Anyway, it might be different now, but like, or it'd stop for summer and things like that. It's just like then, or Christmas and things like that, and people are just, kids are lost, they don't know what to do, so they end up hanging about their pals, getting up to stuff they shouldn't be getting up to. Like really, if they had a focus, it'd be different. I've said that. I think that's how, I mean, America's not the best example of like how their society runs, but like they've got the right idea with like scholarships to get kids into universities and colleges and that there, I think, like to further their education and help them. I think somebody that's bang average in school could then could study hard and go and become a doctor because they're given the right opportunities. I think that's what we miss in the UK and a lot of other places in the world. I think kids aren't given the opportunities. I think people aren't given the opportunities that they need because they don't have access to it.
Yeah, and I know what you mean. No, like kind of what we touched on as well, like both of us, so, and most of the people I know that do Muay Thai found it by accident. Like it's not something that people, it's presented to you really in a mainstream way. And it is like something that can be obviously massively fulfilling and give you that kind of focus and drive.
Yep.
Yeah. Right, man, I'll let you go because it's getting later on.
No problem. Not a problem, anytime at all.
All right, that's the episode. If you're hearing this, I'm assuming you've made it to the end of two parts. What a fucking trooper you are. But easy is it when it's someone that's interested in. As Brian, I thought it was a really cool podcast. Loads about Muay Thai, loads about kind of mentality, and an interesting story in part one about... I went over that in the intro and outro to that episode. I'm not going to go over it again. But yeah, I really liked that little... a part of the podcast where Brian spoke about having to find his passion again for Muay Thai and the pressures of changing gym and stuff. I thought that was really cool. So yeah, overall, a good laugh, a good episode, I thought. I don't know why I'm reviewing my own podcast, but yeah, I absolutely loved it as well. The quote, you might have seen the little image I made of Brian talking about how he's had less cuts than most people in Glasgow. one of my favourite sound bites from the podcast over the last 3 years or so, for sure. So, yeah, that was brilliant. Anyway, I'm going to let you fuck off now because I've taken up too much of your time this week. There will be another episode next week. It was actually recorded before this one, but trying to mix it up with the Thai boxing episodes to the non-Thai boxing episodes. So decided to hold that one back and release it next week. It's with a tattoo artist who's actually about to tattoo me today. So I need to go and get sorted out for that. All right, thank you so much for listening. We're on Instagram at MoodSwingsAbs, MoodSwingsABZ. Same for Twitter, Facebook, don't bother because of Pile Pish. And yeah, thank you so much for listening and hopefully catch you next week. Cheers.